What we say is for yourself. And her glory is like your hair when Jackson lives inside your head. Nuts, bugs, nuts, bugs, nuts, bugs, fuck off. Nuts, bugs, nuts, bugs, nuts, bugs, fuck off. If you're not right, get out of here. You ain't no better.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today to talk about Jeremy Saulnier's Green Room, we have Amanda Waltz.
So, I know you can't see me, but I was totally thrashing around.
Are we not going to get those sweet, sweet intros?
Not today.
This is more punk rock, so I don't know. I can't.
I was thinking of things
I could say to you, but no. We'll save the cool raps that I made up for another time.
Spoilers, Brian. Spoilers.
Spoilers. I came up with a rap introduction for both Bill and Amanda, and they're amazing. And if you all are lucky, maybe one day you'll hear them.
If we ever, because I was saying you're a year too late to introduce them, if in relation to the movie we're talking about, because last year was Dope and Straight Outta Compton, and it would have been perfect.
Yeah. Yep. No, unless I just come up with some screaming punk for y'all. But I mean, like, who would even understand it?
I mean, yeah.
All right. Well, we also got Bill Graham on the horn. Bill, what's Ooh. Up?
Yeah.
Like I said, we are here today to talk about Green Room, the newest film, which is why we let off with the Dead Kennedys, Nazi punks, fuck off. Which is actually featured in the movie, which I was pretty happy about.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
A lot of trouble picking intro music for this because I am, or was, a part of the DC hardcore scene. So I was like, oh, I could do some Fugazi.
Yeah.
And I was like, we got to go with the Dead Kennedys.
So my husband was in a punk band that played at, I think he may have played around DC, and there was terminology, like scene terminology in this movie where I was like, what does that mean? And he's like, I have no idea. Like when they're trying to figure out what kind of skinheads are at this venue and the guy, what's his name? Tadpole.
Yeah.
Tells them, I was like,
ultra right. Well, technically extreme left, but
yeah. I was what does that mean?
we're jumping ahead, but that was totally a deal with the scene in DC
and
all
totally
around the world with punk music was that skinheads were there. They started off as a punk movement and then got kind of subsumed by the neo-Nazi movement.
Right.
Very strange. I was obviously super excited about this movie.
Oh, sorry.
We can get into more of that when we actually are talking about it specifically. For now, let me just remind everyone, you can find us on Facebook, just search The Film Stage Show. You can also find us on Twitter, at Film Stage Show. You can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com, or you can find us on thefilmstage.com, and someone did that. They went on our post for the invitation, and they left a comment. So, Marlon Wallace, I can't really read it. I will say that he agrees with me, and this is one of the few times it's a long comment, but it's a good comment. And
no, it's a good comment.
I have to say, I'm just glad because I rarely ever get a shout out in the comments for someone who agrees with me, even though I'm certain that most people do. So, Marlon, thank you.
No, it was a very fair. I appreciate any comment that isn't just like, you guys suck, whatever. Bleh.
We don't
like,
get a lot of those.
Yeah, we do every once in a while, but like I appreciate like a good, long, thoughtful comment. And this definitely
That's who we try to appeal to. So,
exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, if you're not leaving a long, thoughtful comment, I just assume you're an idiot.
Well done. Well done.
Totally not trying to burn away any of our listenership. But come on, idiots, leave us some comments, leave us some ratings, find us on iTunes. That's about that for the lead-in. Before we get to Green Room, I will say that someone on Twitter actually asked if we were going to talk about Keanu. So very briefly, did you just meow?
Yeah.
Oh my god. All right, so Keanu is the new comedy action film from Key and Peele, Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, who had a hilarious Comedy Central show, and this is their first real dive into feature filmmaking. And I wrote the review for the film stage, so you can go on there and find that. But I'll just say, it was hilarious.
Aww.
If you were concerned that it wouldn't sustain itself over a full film, I mean, plot-wise, narratively, they definitely stretched it too far. But this is one hell of a hilarious film. It's hard to categorize just exactly how much I was laughing and how I'm going to need to see it again, because I'm fairly certain that my laughter and the laughter of the people around me drowned out many jokes that had been said.
It's such an odd... Because when I first saw the trailer for it and read about it, it's such a... I mean, it is a spin on John Wick. It's just not... It's not a very traditional spin on John Wick. It's so odd.
No, it's this super weird film. For anyone who somehow doesn't know what this is about, basically... So, Jordan Peele's character, Rel, is a guy who just got broke up with, and then he finds a cat on his porch and adopts this cat and falls super in love with it. Because as his cousin, Clarence, tells him, played by Keegan-Michael Key, oh my god, that is the cutest cat I've ever seen. And it is. It is the cutest cat that has ever been put on film. And the cat is not just like set dressing. The cat has a very like pure personality.
Oh, wow.
There are scenes of this cat racing through, like, gunfights where its little back legs are, like, skidding, and it's adorable.
I gotta say, I'm kind of surprised, just from the footage I watched in the trailer, that PETA didn't take issue with this movie, because there is a slow-mo, like, piece of footage in the trailer where the cat runs into somebody's foot as it's running.
Yeah.
And it's like the cat's doing it to itself, but it's still, I'm surprised that there wasn't a complaint.
I mean, as a person who has two dogs, I know that animals are bound to run into things.
Right.
So, yeah. But even better than that, if anyone who's watched Key and Peele knows that they make a lot of comedic hay out of stereotypes.
Mm.
And either subverting or playing into those stereotypes. And one of my favorite early sketches that they did involved two men speaking very tough on the cell phones as they walk by each other, basically just being real, just like amped up, hyper masculine. And then as soon as they turn the corner away from each other, each of them drops their kind of street lingo and says, oh my god, I nearly got mugged. And that is basically this movie throughout the entire thing. Rel and Clarence are accurately defined as nerds. And in their effort to get Keanu, the cat, back after he has been stolen, they just basically decide to pretend to be street gangsters. And it's freaking hilarious.
And Method Man.
Method Man is there as Cheddar.
Going through
Michael.
A renaissance as a comedic actor, which is so odd, because he was also in Trainwreck, I believe.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think he was the nurse taking care of her dad.
Oh my
god. I could be wrong.
Well,
I think it's Method Man.
I know that the band.
Is that Method Man?
No.
Was it Red Man?
No.
Okay.
Definitely none of those people.
Okay, wait.
Sorry.
Well, I'm going to keep talking. They basically become in charge of a small section of this gang, the 17th Street Blips, which are people who were too hardcore for the Bloods and the Crips, so they banded together to form a new gang. And it's basically that single joke. There's an adorable cat that everybody wants, and these two guys are the most white bread people on earth pretending to be gangsters. And that doesn't get old. The plot strains itself to hit like the hour and a half, hour 45 minute mark. But it's so funny that you kind of get over that.
They didn't do a tight 80 minutes.
Yeah. What happened to the 80 minute like comedy? Like, it seems like so much of these films now, especially comedies, are just stretched to the point where it's like, guys, like, y'all could have cut it short.
It might be because they probably do a lot of improv. And they just don't want to waste any material. That's my guess. But like, oh, by the way, I talked to the internet, Bill. It is Method Man.
What?
I talked to the internet.
Wait.
The internet and I just talked.
Guys, we're in the movie criticism business. All you have to do is go onto IMDb.
I did. That's
look
what I
up
mean.
His name. Like, this isn't hard.
I just did that. That's what I mean, Brian.
Okay.
Okay, but he wasn't like playing it up that the fact that he was Method Man in that film.
No, but I'm just saying he is making a
I didn't realize that because he was not like, if you tell me DMX is in a movie, it's like, yeah. DMX is in a movie, right? And if you tell me Coolio's in a movie, Coolio is in the movie. When she said Redman was in the movie, Method Man.
Who he is being marqueed as.
He's Method Man.
He's Method Man. That's his name. Yeah. His name is Method Man.
That is his Christian name.
Mrs. Man, a boy, Method.
So, what? Now y'all just backing with me. Okay.
Anyway, let's move on.
This is completely unnecessary. Again, Keanu out in theaters, wide release now. It is hilarious and definitely worth a look.
Oh, I'm so excited now.
You should be, but you should see Everybody Wants Them first.
They had cats in the lobby over at Alamo to promote.
Did
Keanu.
They? Wait, like live cats?
Yes, little kids.
Were they up for adoption?
Oh,
of course they were.
Were they up for adoption?
I'll have one of my friends send me the picture that she took of this fluffiest cat ever.
Oh my god.
Most fluffiest. All right.
That's so sweet.
Well, that is that for Keanu. Glad we could take time to educate everyone about this hilarious movie, which did not beat Jungle Book at the box office this weekend.
No, Jungle Book's still going strong.
Yeah, third week at number one.
That means we're getting a sequel.
To be fair, though, there's not a whole lot. Because we were looking, when I was looking up times for Green Room, we usually go to this theater that's like right, like within like a 5-minute drive of our house. And we were looking at that theater, and my husband was like looking through all the movies. He's like, let's see, Mother's Day. And he's like naming all, and he's like, wow, this is a rough
week. The critical reaction to Mother's Day makes me wish that we had talked about Mother's Day.
It is so, they are roasting that movie so hard. And it's like,
movie apart.
Some of the best movie writing on the internet right now is happening as negative reviews to Mother's Day.
I think it was the Atlantic review. Just excellent. Just such. I mean, because it's like, it's not. It's one of those movies where if you have to review this movie, you might as well make comedy gold out of it.
Yeah.
And that's what people are doing, and I very much appreciate it.
I agree. All right, well, let's talk about a movie that's actually worth talking about then, and that is Green Room. Again, the newest film from Jeremy Saulnier. Out in theaters now. It expanded this weekend, that's why we're talking about it. It's actually in some megaplexes.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
Yeah, so here is the trailer.
I can get you guys a solid gig. Matinee tomorrow, doors at 1, you guys are on at 3.
Gentlemen,
you're trapped. Things have gone south. It won't end well.
So that is the trailer for Green Room. Newest from, I swear to God, they're not paying us, A24.
Oh my God. Killing it.
Can they do any wrong? I don't think they can. They had 4 trailers in front of this movie, and each looked better than the last.
It's also crazy because they've kind of cornered the market of being trapped in like one location.
It's so true. Between like what, Ex Machina, Room, and now this.
Well, they also didn't they?
Oh, they did Locke.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I forgot about Locke.
How could you forget about Locke?
I don't know.
Well, it happens. Because I have so my brother-in-law just moved to Pittsburgh, and so he gets to hear all of my constant blather about the latest movie news, and
Sounds dreadful.
It's terrible. No, he enjoys it. Because he lived in L.A. and he just moved here. And, like, so he enjoys talking about film. And I told him about this.
That's why he moved away.
No. L.A. is way too expensive. But he... So I told him about Swiss Army Man. And then he went to see this movie with us. And there was a... I was trying my best to describe Swiss Army Man, and it didn't sound like a real movie. And then we saw the trailer for it at the green room screening, and I was like, there it is! And he was like, it is crazier than how you described it.
Pretty much.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's, you know what, we're not talking about Swiss Army Man.
No, let's not talk, I just wanted to mention that.
But
because,
I will say that trailer is even more crazy than Daniel Radcliffe farting corpse movie would make you think.
No, it's way crazier.
Now, Green Room...
Anyway, sorry.
By Jeremy Saulnier. This is his follow-up to Blue Ruin, which we talked about on the show when it came out. I don't remember when that was. If I were better at this, I would have looked it up so people could look into our back catalog.
Yeah.
Google it. This movie...
That's 2014, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It stars Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Alia Shawkat, and Patrick Stewart. I was trying to think of an adjective, like the indomitable, the impressive, but it's like, it's Patrick Stewart.
The ageless.
Say that name and you know it.
He is ageless. That's the word you want to use.
Sure, that's a great one.
you could just call him Captain.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Captain.
All right, anyway, so there is a punk band, DC, technically Arlington, the Ain't Rights, which is a beautiful punk band name,
mm-hmm.
just straight off the bat. Perfect.
And it's real too, so that's interesting.
What?
It's a real band?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No.
Yes.
Really?
Not with these people, though.
No.
Okay.
Not with these people.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so the Ain't Rights, and they are
a lot of that comes from Saulnier.
They are outside of Portland. They have been given a gig, which will hopefully give them enough money to get back home. Problem is, this gig is at a backwoods white supremacist bar, basically. And they end up accidentally witnessing a murder, and they become trapped and have to fight their way out. So, guys, let's talk about Green Room. Bill Graham, why don't you kick us off?
Ooh, okay. Where to begin with this movie?
oh, my God.
first things first, I love that he's continued to use primary colors to... talking about his films. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to his next film, which will be about a family who has to fight their way out of a casual burger joint called Red Robin.
Brian.
Yeah. Oh, I had that one saved up.
Weak. The worst.
Weak. Oh, man. More food stuff. Oh, great. Anyways.
Look, a good punk band is a lot like a never-ending basket of fries at Red Robin.
All right, I'm taking a shot. Brian just did a few minutes before. Taking a shot.
Oh, no. Anyways, okay. So one thing that I want to say is if you haven't seen Blue Ruin, hopefully this makes you want to go see it. Or if you've already seen it, it hopefully just allows you to appreciate what Saulnier is doing here yet again. He is, I think, the king of making a thriller where you observe characters that aren't necessarily making the greatest decisions, but they aren't shooting themselves unnecessarily in the foot to the point where they're making really bad decisions just to move the plot forward. Everything happens in this film in a very believable fashion. And in fact, Saulnier gets great use out of his former lead actor in this film in particular by basically setting I'm trying to look up his name real quick, Macon Blair.
Yeah.
And Gabe is basically the guy that's kind of running this club. And as soon as all hell breaks loose, he's the one that kind of takes over for a little bit, just the briefest moment to hand it off basically to Patrick Stewart's character. But he basically is this nice kind of in-between character where you can't tell whether he's good, whether he's bad. You can't tell what's going on. And it's confusing at first to you as an audience member, just as it is confusing to them as the punk rock band, because they can't tell whether he's helping them, whether he's trapping them. And you know, I won't give too much away in that regard, but I think Saulnier does a great job of just setting these characters up to do this world building, to do all this stuff that just feels natural, and it feels like you're put in the film's reality without having to be given a bunch of extraneous information. And I think it's obviously his methodology, but it would be one thing if it was a very simple and easy to understand plot. It would be another thing to make it as complicated and have all these nuances within this plot, and yet still feel very easy, like it was easy to do. But you can look at just about any film, especially in the Hollywood kind of machine, and realize that doing what he does so effortlessly takes a lot of effort. There's a lot of research on behind the scenes. There's a lot of effort in the way that he conducts dialogue and things like that, that really, really shines in a film like this. You may not realize it if you haven't seen a lot of movies. Between Brian, Amanda, and I, we probably watch, 200, 300 films throughout an entire year. So we're very hyper aware of things where they don't explain key plot elements and stuff like that. We pick up on that stuff, and there's definitely a lot of that all strewn throughout. That's a lot kind of dumping on the plot itself, without talking about the film itself. I think the film is absolutely thrilling. I think for 80 minutes, it's basically 95 minutes is the runtime. I'd say probably an hour, probably a solid hour of that is once things kick off. And once things really kick off in this film, it's just breakneck pace. And you rarely get a moment to breathe, because the situation is pretty damn dire. I remember at one point just thinking, no one's going to get out of this, and yeah. I was wondering if he was really going to go down that route. It is crazy the way that he sets this up and really, really gives you a sense, because right off the violence picks up a notch before you're even aware that's a possibility. And as soon as the violence kicks off, you start to realize that nobody in this film is safe, and nothing that you think kind of play by the rules of what a normal thriller is interests Jeremy Saulnier at all. it's crazy the different characters that he kind of puts inside this film, and the way it's shot is just so well done. And thank you so much for being a practical effects guy, because really some of these, whether it's the violence, whether it's just simply the fact that you can see so much of the reality of the background of the green room, the set itself, things like that. It really is quite interesting what he's able to pull off without making it obvious. Now, there are a certain amount of green screen shot, or not green screen, but CGI in the film, of course, and things like that. But for the most part, this is pretty cut and dry. When things happen on screen, they're happening on screen. And beyond that, I just want to say that I love that Patrick Stewart is involved in this film, and I love his character because the film doesn't overuse him. Now, one criticism I've heard recently was that it doesn't use him enough. And I think that's both fair and unfair. It's fair in just simply the sense that he's big name, and you're just hoping and praying that he's in the film more because he's such an interesting character in the film, and you just want to see more of him. But I think it's unfair because if it was anyone else, you would literally be like, oh yeah, that guy, he was in the film, he was cool. I didn't need more of him, but it's because he's Patrick Stewart that you're like, oh, I need more of him, you know?
That is the unfairness of Patrick Stewart.
Sure.
Is that there always must be more Patrick Stewart.
Exactly. You got to get more of that guy, right? And give it up to Saulnier to be brave enough to make a film where you have him on, you know, on the posters, on the... he is kind of... You see him and you see some of the punks in the background, and that's kind of like the poster that they ran with.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously it's smart because, you know, Patrick Stewart's a big name, but right. It's also,
I mean,
like,
he's a big name, but I don't know if he's marketable. Like,
I think it's such an odd choice that it's such a curious choice for him that it's enough to really make people wonder, oh, what is this?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, for him to be in the middle of a thriller like this, this dark, brooding,
and to be
thriller,
a bad guy, pretty much. Yeah.
And so you're kind of, wow, like, what's going on with this film? I'll say I liked a lot of the punk stuff that was kind of intertwined into the film, and obviously Saulnier, well, not obviously, if you're not aware of this, Saulnier has a background in the punk rock scene. And
oh, yeah. I would say obviously, because the way that he sets up their lives is pretty authentically specific.
Oh, definitely.
Either way, it definitely should be noted that he does have a punk rock background, and yeah. So there is
we all.
I mean, I know I do.
You know, it's interesting because even as someone that hasn't really explored that scene myself, mm-hmm. It's interesting because you can feel some of that.
Yeah.
In the film, you can feel its realness, and you know, some films try and get away with that, and then some films just do it kind of effortlessly. And so I think just again, it's remarkable to me how effortless a lot of this film ends up feeling, and just to know his background, just to know what he's gone through and his process is, you know, there's so much effort to make it look like that. So
all right.
Basically, I loved it.
Just had to get another word in.
Yeah,
Amanda Waltz, what did you think of Green Room?
Yeah, so I fucking love this movie.
this may be the Mad Max podcast.
Oh,
again.
God. It is... It's a masterpiece. I know... I feel fine saying that. Like, and there's... So, just, you know, this is obviously a very visceral film, so I went into this movie, and I really had to pee, like, really bad, and I was like, okay, like, halfway through the movie, I was like, I can't leave, I absolutely cannot leave this movie, so
yeah,
I'll just wait.
You're stuck. That's
oh, nice. Yeah, I was like, I'll just wait. There were so many moments where I thought I was going to pee my pants, I'm not joking, because I was so tense. And I was expecting anything could have happened. I was expecting I was just so afraid because I was jumping and I was like, I thought I was going to pee my pants. And then I was so wound up after I watched this movie that I had to go patio furniture shopping to calm myself down.
What?
I was so
that like
wound
a
up.
Choice or what, is that something you were planning on doing anyway?
I mean, not really. I just, we left and I said to my husband, well, first I did some push-ups. And then I said,
"Are you serious again?"
No, I'm totally serious.
Is this like a farm thing that you used to do?
No, I was just really extremely wound up. And
so
I said to my husband,
push-ups.
I was like, "We have to do something to calm me. I need to do an activity that will calm me down." And so we went shopping for patio furniture because I was so wound up.
After you did push-ups.
And I did push-ups.
Where did you do the push-ups?
At home. We came home and I did the push-ups.
Oh, see, yeah.
Walked into the lobby of the theater.
I didn't
do
it in
the push-ups.
But yeah. I mean, I was driving home like,
oh, jeez.
So wound up. That's what this movie does to you. It is just so, like you said, Bill, you can't catch your breath. It is nonstop for, like you said, a good hour. It's gripping. It is chilling as hell. It is, and like you said, Bill, and I mean, you said that you don't have much, you're not very schooled in the scene. I am to a point, and I will say, I think Saulnier and I may have had very similar experiences with, like maybe how we experienced punk, because in where I grew up, Central Pennsylvania, if you wanted to go to a punk show, you had to go to a venue like that. You had to go, you went to the middle of, you went to some Nowheresville, Pennsylvania, to like a fire hall, to some nondescript building, and that's where you watched punk. Because you weren't going to go, if you wanted to go to an underage club, like if you wanted to go to an underage show, that's where you did it. And so, and it was, it's crazy to think back, because there was a very, it's kind of scary to think about it actually, because there was actually a big skinhead movement where I grew up too, like around Scranton. It was a huge problem in the 90s.
Well, yeah, just, I mean, it was, you know, the Rust Belt and...
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even joking this time. I'm not about Pittsburgh.
I am agreeing. No, I would, this was nowhere near Pittsburgh. This is middle Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is like, there was actually to a point where, I mean, the whole country knew about it. It was really bad. And it's probably still very prevalent. But, you know, but getting just to the style of the film, I mean, like you said, Bill, it did seem very accurate. This is very accurate. The way it depicts just the scene, just, I mean, the attention to detail is incredible, because one of the things about the way people try to depict punk shows or punk venues or the punk lifestyle, you can do it wrong so easily. Like, if you do not have a background in it, if you don't know, like, I'm very curious to see, like, who did the wardrobe in this movie, because the wardrobe is perfect. It's so great. Everybody has their punk uniform on, and it's perfect.
They've got the perfect amount of holes in their shirts.
Like a t-shirt that you've been, like the one guy is wearing a t-shirt that looked like it hasn't been washed in weeks. Grimy and disgusting.
Well, because these guys are traveling in their van. They're sleeping in their van. They're doing the crash thing with another punk in Seattle. Like, I don't know where he was.
I don't remember. I was a little confused about where this was, because I mean, like you said, this, because it was outside of Portland, but it was probably just some small town outside of Portland, which it is. And so one of the words that keeps coming up whenever I think just in my own, like talking about Saulnier, is precise. Mm-hmm. There is, his direction is so precise, and this is something my Twitter buddy Michael Snydell, another critic at the Film Stage, we were talking about Blue Ruin. But we were talking about it on Twitter, and I used the word, and then Rafi Azdorian, who's another critic, said something on Facebook about like the precision of Saulnier's technique, and he's extremely precise, extremely meticulous, and it is so impressive what he is able to come up with, because he does not miss a beat. Everything is in the movie for a reason. Like every single thing plays into the movie, plays into like the final just showdown. And it is crazy. I mean, it is crazy. The shit that happens in this movie.
Oh yeah.
I was astounded. Just by, like, the knife wounds are super accurate. Like you were saying, the practical effects, Bill. There is a scene where two young skinheads, in order to cover up the real murder that happens in this movie, like, one stabs the other on purpose. It is just like, oh my God. It's so brutal.
Yeah.
And it's strange because, too, there were moments where I was laughing where I was thinking, am I laughing because this is actually funny, or am I laughing because I am just so uncomfortable with everything that is happening?
I mean, there's definitely moments of levity in there in some of the violence some of the things that happen that are very, very serious. But because they're so – we just don't see a lot of this stuff happen in films where people are making smart decisions that basically
they're very resourceful.
Well, yeah. They're resourceful, but as a viewer, as an outsider, you're watching it and you're like, whoa, what? Like this is crazy.
Because you're thinking, like, how would I react in this situation? Yeah. I have no fucking idea. It really is. And it's in a way where I think it is very realistic. Like, maybe not realistic. I hate to use that word describing films, but it is just very, like, believable. Like, you really would have no idea what to do. And I think the way that it's just the survivalist horror in this weird skinhead punk venue in the middle of, like, Oregon. It's so incredible. And I gotta say, I feel like you gave enough credit to Patrick Stewart. I'm gonna give some credit to Imogene Poots.
Well, yes.
Holy
she's
fucking shit. Girl killed it in this movie.
She is insane.
You were saying, actually, you were talking about Macon Blair and how you really weren't sure. I feel like he was definitely they were sort of like almost unknowingly battling for his soul in this movie. Mm-hmm. Between the skinhead and then this more progressive East Coast punks. But, like, Imogene Poots, there were times when I was like, is she, like, a femme fatale? Is she going to turn on them? Like, what's happening?
It's funny because in the marketing and the trailer, like, I kept on hearing how crazy she was and like, how good she was in the film. And so in the marketing, they kind of give a hint like maybe she's got a little duosity in her and stuff like that, and I was like, ooh, what's going on with this character?
Duosity? We mean duality?
Duality. I'm just making shit up, man.
Duosity, we could definitely turn into some kind of like awesome Web 3.0 app thing. Let's file that one away.
Anyway,
it's gonna replace Slack.
Yeah, obviously.
But it is, I think that it's such an incredible movie for me, because when I saw Blue Ruin, I wasn't completely wowed by it. There were some things that I did have some issues with it, but when you think about it in terms of there are so many independent films made by so many young filmmakers that are just tons of them come out every year, and so many of them are, like, 99% of them are mediocre at best.
Mm-hmm. Mediocre. That when
something like Blue Ruin comes out and you see just the potential of it, it's like, it's not perfect, but there's something there. Like,
it's definitely one of those films that you could see someone making, that a studio head is like, hey, We gotta give that dude a superhero film, right? Oh. Like, that's, you know, and I hate...
imagine Jeremy's...
That's what I think about every single, like, independent film I see. It's like, oh, is this guy gonna get a superhero film?
Yeah,
David Lowery gonna get a superhero film?
It's kind of sad, but it's also kind of awesome at the same time, because you realize... At one side, it's like, oh man, like they're no longer gonna have to grind and really work. But it's like, no, once they make their one or two superhero films, they go back to being a normal human being for a while.
Like who?
And I mean, off the top of my head, John Favreau.
I'm having a blank.
John Favreau did Chef, and then he went back to doing big budget stuff.
Yeah. Does the cobbler count?
What?
Because technically, the cobbler was a superhero.
Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Sorry. No, but he is such. He has a vision, and he has such. He has such a purpose with his films, and I know you guys kind of mentioned this too, before, about this A24. Trend with, you know, single location films. Also, I think that this is such an amazing reflection of just, I think somebody said something like, this is the first true, like, Trump Nation film.
What?
Like Trump, I mean? Like,
I've heard that.
No, yeah. I really have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, just kind of like a movie that really reflects our current political climate.
Mm-hmm. This movie? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, this I think movie. So. Because you have to think, it's like, it's such a division. And when you have such a division where you have, you know, this extreme and this extreme, when you have such extreme ideologies and you still have to live and work and associate with these people who have such, there is something very like claustrophobic.
But this
movie
premiered at Cannes last year before.
I know,
Trump
but
was
that's
even
the crazy
in...
thing. That's the but it is. It's like,
well,
but you
there's
have
a
to,
lot of. I mean, there's a
but
lot
then
of.
That
films.
Just takes you back to the divisions in the punk movement in the 80s and 90s. Like that's not
but
Trump.
Things, yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Dangerous
but,
to
and
think
I think
that that's Trump. That's just how life is.
But yeah, no, I agree. But I think that it's just like
that's the dumbest thing I've heard anyone say.
Oh, Ryan, go fuck yourself.
Jesus, Ryan. You're taking it as this idea that he specifically did it to be
no,
a
I
Trump.
Think that
no,
and it's
that's
like,
not
no,
what
that's
I'm
not
saying.
What takes
I'm
that's
saying
not
that
what
it
she's
is
saying.
Very reflecting. Yeah. Ryan, calm down. Like
it's everything is circular, man.
It's yeah,
the snake
it's
eating its tail.
What's that awful fucking True Detective? Oh. God. Anyway, but no, but I think it is. I think this is a movie that really just captures just the feeling of like what's going on right now, whether or not he meant it to, Brian. It just does. And
Soothsayer, Jeremy Saulnier.
I just think my issue with putting it that way is that is the way it's always been, and I think that
but
more
I,
than anything, that's what this movie is saying, is that it's almost like a universal constant that there will be people
right.
on the fringes living to the extreme, or
but,
in
but
this
I
case,
think,
like the same but in different lateral positions, and that's a problem. That's not a tenable
right,
position.
Right, it is, but I think it's, you know, and this has been building up over years, you have to think. Like, this isn't a new phenomena. But it's especially like everyone, you know, it's that whole thing where it's like, oh, we're more divided than ever, which of course is bullshit. But still, it's that feeling and it's that, I just think it's just watching it. It's just so like, I just think it's so incredibly relevant. And I just thought this was an amazing film. Like I said, I already called it a masterpiece. So
yep. I agree.
I don't know if there much more really needs to be said.
Yeah, once you call something a masterpiece, it's kind of like that you can sit down. Like,
right. Gotta say, though, and what this movie does with... There's some dog business in this movie that...
Dog business.
It is... Well, we can go into it with spoilers.
Yeah, I'll
say this for anyone that's like, oh shit, there's dogs in this film, and you know, I have a couple of friends that basically if they know a dog or a cat or you know horse or animal is basically harmed in the film, they're like, nope, can't watch it.
There's a website called like Does the Dog Live or something.
Yeah. I was just about
well,
to say
it,
yeah,
this film it treats the animals well, so I'll just say that. So you don't have to walk in and be like, oh no, what's gonna happen to the dogs or anything like that. Like,
oh man, if someone walks out of this movie more concerned about the dogs than anything else, that person is not your friend.
I'm more concerned about the dogs. And that's coming from a dog person.
I have two dogs that I love dearly, and I have stress dreams about bad things happening to them. But like this is not the movie that makes me go, oh no, the dogs. This is the movie that makes me go, oh no, the dogs.
Oh yeah.
we'll talk about it anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What did I feel about this film?
What did you feel?
What did I think of this film? Maybe I can express myself better in song. So. So that's what I thought. This movie is indeed a bombshell. That was
yes.
Bombshell by Operation Ivy. And yeah, this movie is explosive. After taking its time to set up all these people in the situation and build this sense of dread, it explodes and becomes an unerring nightmare.
Oh my God.
And when I was in college, I was deep in the punk rock scene. Not so much because I sought it out, even though I loved punk music growing up. Growing up around DC, you kind of couldn't escape it.
Mm-hmm.
So in high school and everything, in middle school, you know, I had the friends who had the Op Ivy patches, the Black Flag, and the Minor Threat. Super happy that Anton Yelchin was wearing a Minor Threat shirt the entire time. But when I went to college, my last 2 years living in that house that I actually brought up during the Everybody Wants Some
did
podcast.
Did you live in a punk house, Brian?
I lived in a punk house.
Are you fucking kidding me?
My house.
Yes, he did.
My house was a venue. People from all over the country would come to play in my basement in college. It was the House of Awesome Times. It was...
sounds like good studying.
It was a stoner, crust, gutter punk, like, fucking Wonderland.
Gross.
I would man the door, you know, putting X's on hands and taking money. I would have to be there in the middle of the day to receive the band that had driven from Columbia up through the country playing random, like, tours and then coming to our house to play and sleeping in our basement and making the whole house vegetarian chili as a means of saying thank you because they couldn't pay us. I mean, this house was crazy. And we had crazy shows. We had scene fights between the Baltimore punks and the DC punks. And we had one rule, and that rule was no skinheads. And
yeah.
So, yeah, watching this movie, I was like totally on board before we even got to the extreme violence. What I think I was most impressed about with this film, it's something that I've brought up when we talk about the films of John Hillcoat. And it's that they feel more violent than they are because these are both two filmmakers who understand the after effect of the moment of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that means so much more than seeing someone get their arm chopped at by a machete or seeing someone get gutted with like a katana or something. Like when you know how the human body responds mm-hmm. to certain traumas, you make it so much more difficult for the audience in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this movie has that in spades. This movie is great. Anton Yelchin, who, this is the first time anyone has ever said this, who I loved in Fright Night.
Yes, yes. He's so good in Fright
He's
Night.
Great in Fright Night.
And that movie's actually kind of good, too.
That's a fun movie. Fright Night with Anton Yelchin and Colin Farrell and Imogen Poots.
Oh, really?
Now that I think about it, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Imogen Poots in Fright
funny.
Night.
Hold on. To the interwebs.
Yeah, to the internet. So, yeah, it's just like, and him in that movie actually is a lot like him in this movie. Where it's like
she's in it.
A guy who's overmatched and is like out of his depth, but is going to fight. And just, you know, it's obvious that Saulnier, who also wrote this film, has a very thorough knowledge of the history of each of these mm-hmm, characters, mm-hmm. but he doesn't do that stupid thing that a lot of movies do where it's like, oh, you know, we're all in trouble. So let's talk about like our demented childhoods.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's like, oh, well, my dad used to beat me. Oh, well, you know, my mom was an alcoholic. Or, oh, I got bullied in school.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's that save the cat thing where it's like set up a game and then it becomes necessary to win that game to win the movie. There's not that in this. And that's quite refreshing because there's enough going on in this movie that you don't need that. And if I had to come up with a thing that I didn't like about this film. I hate being that guy who
No, you don't. No, you don't
else.
Hate being that
no,
guy, Brian. Shut the fuck up.
And that's the thing. I am going to say that this thing that I'm about to say in no way makes me second guess my saying that this movie is like an A+ thrill-a-minute joyride that everyone should climb on board. But when you have a movie that is punks versus Nazis, I guess I just kind of wish there was more of like a punk rock spirit in the filmmaking. But
what?
Okay, so this is what I'm saying.
That was amazing.
Again,
that was amazing.
I don't want this movie to be the movie that I'm talking about. But when I walked in, I kind of thought like, Have you ever been in a mosh pit? Like, have you ever been at a punk show? And
are you talking about,
like,
the thrash scene?
Like,
the
just
slow-mo?
Like, that violence. Like, I was hoping for that, but when it became clear I wasn't going to get that, I was fine with it. But there is a part of me that's like, there has to be a way to make an action film that features the punk scene or a punk rocker and can capture that, like, unhinged, out-of-control violence of being at a punk show and just turn it on its head to make it an action film. But this, as a character study and a very slow-burn, objective look at a bad situation that hedges more towards reality, is perfect and flawless.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No.
Because, like,
I don't agree with you, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. I'm just saying, like, if there is a filmmaker out there who feels like making that movie, I fully endorse it.
I think this perfectly encapsulates, like, what it feels like to be at a punk show, how dirty and filthy and grimy and just, like,
no, and I
basically
get that,
the rules of civilization don't apply.
I want that tone to extend to the action scenes. And we can get into, in spoilers, why that would be a terrible fit for this movie, and I'm so happy he didn't do that.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
But what I'm saying is, somewhere out there, there is a film that could do that, and I'm now more interested in seeing that, and I thought that that's what this was going to be, just from the trailers and the poster, but I'm perfectly happy that it didn't do that. I am 100%
fine.
So
it sounds like kind of what I wanted from The Witch, which it both gave me and didn't give me, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The good thing about a great movie is that it almost inspires you to think of, like, other great movies in your head. And that's what this movie does. I read some reviews of this that I super didn't agree with, because they kept saying things like, oh, these people make stupid decisions, or oh, these people don't feel real. Oh. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I know,
in the least. And it hurt that one of those was actually from our website.
No.
Yeah.
Who wrote it?
I don't know. It was from the Cannes Film Festival.
He was a Nazi punk.
Yeah, obviously he was a Nazi punk.
Skinhead writing for our website.
But yeah, it was just weird, because there were things that that a lot of critics have said about this that were like, I don't understand. Like, they say, like, weak characterization. They say, and then they say, like, I think the craziest thing in one of these reviews was him saying that it was impossible to tell what one of the fates of the characters was, because this movie does not mince words about what happens. When we talked about The Invitation last week, I said that there was a point where a character seemed to have teleported.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is flawless in setting up geography and letting you know where everyone is.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a fantastic, fantastic film, and it's going to sink into your bones and haunt you when you try to go to sleep. In a good way.
It is chilling. Like I said, chilling as shit. It is
a chilling, harrowing movie.
Just for a little context, though, it does have 138 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's at 88%. So
that's good. It's still doing well. Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, like, I get it. But, you know, there was one on RogerEbert.com, and then there was one at our website. And I was just like, you know, I don't get it.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
They don't understand, man. They don't understand what it's like. They haven't been there.
Well, okay, so
fucking yuppies.
We'll talk about this particular part in spoilers, but there's a point where someone said something and was like, you obviously, like, I don't think they were engaging with the movie. I can't tell you what I liked so much about this point in the movie and how I disagree with this person until we get into spoilers. So should we get into spoilers?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Green Room, not The Green Room, Green Room. Out in
Thank
theaters
you,
now. This is one of the first films where I haven't had trouble with the definite article.
We're very proud of you.
I know. Maybe it's because I liked it so much.
Golf clap.
So that's Green Room. Out in semi-wide release now. Go check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's continually expanding. Just go
little by little.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it needs an endorsement. It needs an endorsement from the Satanic Church to really get it out there. Like the witch had.
Loves the witch, not cool with Ted Cruz being called Lucifer.
Okay.
I love the Satanic Church.
Who doesn't? So that's it. We're going to get into spoilers. So spoilers right now for Green Room. So,
well, where do we begin?
I don't even know. I think the best and worst thing that this movie did is the Nazis' super interesting and well thought out plan, which is that they're going to stage this like the punks broke onto their property and were trying to siphon gas and were killed by dogs.
Which you don't really, you don't know that until the end.
Right. Well, I've figured that out.
Well,
pretty soon.
You know the basics of it. It's obvious that he wants. He keeps saying no guns, blades only, the dogs. Is there a sign that says no trespassing? But
he's cooking something up.
Hold on. As soon as he finds the, in the back of the van, as soon as he finds they have the tanks and they have the siphon hose, he looks at that and he's like, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, he says something to that regard, and I'm like, oh shit, he's gonna set them up as trespassers. Yep,
my initial thought was he's gonna knife them to death, and then he's gonna burn their van so it looks like the gas can had caught or something.
Oh, that's a good.
I mean, there's a lot of options.
Yeah, there's a few. Yeah,
the way that works in this movie's favor is that A, it's horrifying, and B, it lengthens the movie out because they're not just going to bust down this door.
Sure,
guns
a-blazing, yeah.
And it also allows for some truly horrifying violence that you rarely see directly, but constantly see the after effect of. I'm thinking particularly of Anton Yelchin's hand.
Oh my god. A lot of raw human meat in this movie.
Humans are made of meat. You may not know this, guys, but when you hack at a human, it starts to look a lot like a side of beef.
When Anton Yelchin's hand got chopped the fuck up, it reminded me. So I used to work cut fruit at Whole Foods, and I cut into an overripe, like I cut a little too hard into an overripe avocado, sliced right into my hand. I had to get 14 stitches. I saw the inside of my hand and immediately went into mild shock.
Oh my God.
Like,
In the Boy Scouts, I was the only person who didn't have like a lot of trouble with blood and stuff. So I was the medic for my team when we went into Philmont, New Mexico for like a 2-week long hike, which was hilarious because I was already the orienteer. So at some point, you have the man who's responsible for finding your way through the wilderness, who is also the man who's responsible for medical care. And someone once said, like, what happens if Brian dies? And then everyone else immediately said, well, then we all die, Mike.
It's a very simple truth.
Yeah, it's just even if Brian just like gets gangrene or something, it's like, well, no one can help him and then he'll die and then we'll all die.
You should have had
an understudy, Brian. You should have had an understudy.
I tried to teach people how to use a compass, and in an entire like 14-man squad of Boy Scouts, no one could get it.
It was fucking hilarious.
But this movie, like when he passes that gun out and then they grab his arm, I was like, oh no, they're trying to pull him out of the room. And then he pulls his hand back and his arm has been hacked at.
Yeah.
And the wrist is like dislocated. I was like, and my fiance beside me was.
I don't even know if dislocated is the word. It's
so
non-existent.
So there's a few things that I rarely do in a film, except for like thrillers, and it's one of those things where I'll be sitting in my seat, you know, 2 feet firmly planted on the ground, and inevitably when something like this happens, I end up with my knees to my chest.
Yep.
Somehow, some way, like I'll just realize, like, oh my. My legs.
Oh, how did I
now?
Curl up into this ball?
Oh yeah, I was there. I'm right there with you, Bill.
Slowly sinking lower into my seat with my arms crossed higher and higher up until I'm basically like choking myself.
There was a lot of me putting like pressing my hand against my mouth, not just putting my hand over my mouth, like just like.
This is one of the times that I was excited to be in a general audience theater because even though we went pretty late on a Saturday and. Like, there were only, like, 6 other people in the theater. Two people in front of us were the perfect reactive audience.
Oh.
Because they didn't say something at every point. But when they said something, it counted. So,
nice.
For instance, like, Imogen Poots at some point becomes a badass.
Like, I think she's kind of she's quietly a badass.
She's constantly like a little bit like when she guts that guy.
Oh my god!
Let's talk about that, but let's jump forward or jump back.
Well, she's like
real
There's
a moment where the lights cut off. The Nazis figure out a way to basically cut off the, or not figure out a way. They have access to the fucking electric panel, so they just shut off the lights, and all of a sudden. They have one guy in the green room basically being held at gunpoint that's basically like he is gigantic, like a gigantic
man. I've seen that actor before too.
He's in other stuff. I think he was
in Jurassic World.
Yes, he is the lazy park security guard.
Yeah,
that's in the Rex, whatever the hell thing it is
the
called.
The monster hybrid thing.
Yeah.
The Indominus Rex.
Indominus Rex. That basically, like, he's eating chips and, like, when I think someone is like, hey, where's the Indominus? And he's like, I don't know. And you're just like, dude, you have one job.
He can play dullard and menacing. Yeah. His range is, like, crazy.
He's good. But, so basically the lights cut off and even in your head, you're like, oh, that sucks. Because it's such a cliche, like, oh, you know, here's the moment when the lights go out. Oh, okay, you know, everything will be fine, blah, blah. And then you're like,
That's what you were thinking when the lights went out?
Well, like, it takes you half a second because then you're like, oh, shit, that guy's at gunpoint. They can't see him anymore. And so what does she do? She lights up a cigarette.
Oh, she's cool as a fucking...
Yeah, she puts it in his mouth, and she basically says, if you see the cherry do anything you don't like, shoot it.
Oh,
and you're just like, cool, what?
She is... But when she switches the flip from cool customer to stone cold killer, it's like ratcheting up. I mean, I have loved her since I saw her in 28 weeks later.
Weeks, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She was great in Fright Night. She was great in Knight of Cups. She's great in this. I like every time I see her in a movie, I'm like, oh, sweet. I can't wait.
Well, because she... So there's the scene where... I know, and the scene that you're talking about, where she guts that guy... They're trying the. I think the one, I forget his name, but the one band member is almost like a wrestler.
Yeah,
he's pulling wrestling moves. This guy. Yeah, so
he's got like a jiu-jitsu background, basically.
Okay, so he's trying to put a chokehold, like a sleeper hold on him, and he's like, "Tell me when he's out." And he's just doing it forever and ever and ever, and everyone's freaking out. And Imogene Poots is like, "Fuck it," and just like guts him, and she just epitomizes this like, she's like, a good Nazi is a dead Nazi.
I kind of want to set that up a little bit more because what he's actually doing is when he jumps on this guy's back, the large Nazi dude has a box knife in his hand, a box cutter in his hand. And so the entire time he's like, get it out of his hand, so he doesn't just slice open my arm. And so she finally wrestles it out of his hand.
Yeah.
And they set it up because they basically have him put him in a chokehold.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about kind of the human nature or human body and the way that, like, you have to choke someone for a very long time before they actually die.
I think we covered this in
We covered that in one podcast. I can't remember
what. I think
it
was Black Mass.
Yeah. It takes
I remember
like a
that
long,
very vividly.
In the television show The Americans, there was a realistic choking scene, and it took about the length of Tainted Love
person
to finally die.
Yeah. So
she just gets tired of waiting, and she.
Well,
hold on. Bill, so, we're not talking every scene through.
Like, we have a lot to talk about, Bill. Yeah. We got to move. Well, I know.
Well, y'all keep interrupting. I can blaze through this real quick. Anyways, he basically sets up a chokehold and he releases it, and of course, like not, but a minute and a half later, he gets up again. And
but
you're
he
like,
doesn't
oh,
want the guy
shit.
To die at that point, I don't think.
No,
I think they're just trying to knock him out.
Well, no, I think both. I think he would have been fine with both, but he was definitely trying to knock him out for a while. But they wanted to basically get rid of this dude. And yeah. The second time, he's like, tell me when he's done. Like, basically, yeah. Like, tell me when he's dead. And you think... Oh, okay.
I don't think
so
they were
maybe...
trying to kill him, though. I think they were just
no,
trying
that
to
second time,
out.
They're trying to kill him.
Oh, they were? Okay.
Yeah. And the second time, he's like, tell me when he's actually out, right? And so you think, oh, she's just going to, like, poke him. Like you know, like yeah, sure. Like, maybe this is a good idea. Maybe if I cut him and he doesn't react, I know he's basically dead, right? Instead, nah. She just guts him right up the middle. And you're just
oh,
like,
wow,
what is this movie?
Oh, my God. When she does that, that is basically the movie saying, all bets are off. Guess
yeah.
what? Like,
yeah.
anything can happen at this point.
Yeah.
And you just got to strap in.
Yeah, because it happens not too long after Yelchin gets his hand just massacred. And so, you know,
because
yeah. you
like, don't really see him. I mean, you see the after effect, but like you don't see them chopping his hand.
Sure. Yeah.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which so. Is, yeah, it's incredible. And like, and then should we just go like kill by kill?
I would really prefer not to. I mean
we don't have to,
this,
but I'm
just, you know, we're here to talk about the film in terms of like a review. We don't
I know,
have to
just,
go
I'm
through beat
funny,
by beat
Brian.
Every scene.
Brian, I'm being silly.
I don't believe you, Amanda.
Okay.
But I think one of the best things that this film does, and I was saying this earlier about the kind of script writing, is that you have this core group of friends, this punk band, and there's a point where they talk about their Desert Island albums.
Oh.
And then, you know, Anton Yelchin can't pick one. And then later on, they say them again when they're about to go out and try to destroy and get their way out of there. And they all say again they're Desert Island, but this time they're kind of allowing themselves to not just be punk rockers. They're like just gonna be people
they're
this time.
Be truthful, yeah.
Scared people. So one
yeah.
of them says Prince.
And
one of them says still the Misfits. Anton Yelchin still can't figure it out. And then at the
no,
end of
I
the
thought,
movie,
no, Leah Shawkat says Simon and Garfunkel.
I thought
I don't need
he,
to go through every single person.
I thought so, Yelchin says Prince.
No, he doesn't say Prince. The other guy says Prince. Anton Yelchin is never able to say what his Desert
right.
Island album is because at the end of the movie, he says, I finally got it. And Imogen Poots, who is not his friend, says, why don't you tell someone who gives a fuck?
Fade to black.
Bam. End credits.
Perfect.
Because she's not his friend. She doesn't care. This has been a nightmare and it's finally over. And there's another... like. In that same vein, he says, like, I'm not supposed to die here in this room with you.
Yeah.
Like, these are two people who are only united by their desire to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And I love that the movie doesn't end with them being, like, best friends.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I was so... That's the thing about this movie. You have absolutely no idea how it ends. I thought, because they reveal that underneath the venue is a heroin bunker... where they're manufacturing, packaging, and like distributing heroin. I thought that they were gonna, because there were a bunch of tanks on shelves there. I thought they were gonna blow that place up.
Yeah,
yes.
I was wondering why they didn't use like chemicals to do something.
Yeah, I think, and I'm kind of glad they didn't go that route. I wondered if maybe he. I mean, I do think he did that on purpose to sort of lead you in that direction to be like, nope, we're not actually going to do that. We're going to go this way instead. So yeah. Just to keep you guessing. And then when they go to the compound and they shoot down the dog trainer and Patrick Stewart and the other guy, the other toady guy, they had that van because they show that there are still skinheads like in the skinhead compound house. Like,
yeah.
Basically zonked out on heroin.
Oh, no, they're dead.
No,
well,
the one guy was eating
well,
soup.
Well, the one guy is eating soup, but the other guys are dead.
Oh,
that's
like
Cowcatcher, who they gave bad heroin to.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yep.
So is he, like, does he just realize? Is he just, like, shaken because?
Oh, no, I think he's one of Patrick Stewart's guys who was just like, yep, I've got these dead guys here, and I'm just going to eat some food. because there's some other shit going on. I mean, these are some badass motherfuckers. These are the guys with the red laces.
Well, the other thing, too, is there was so much focus on the siphoning of the gas and the gas can and their van that I thought what they were going to do was they were just going to finish it off. They were going to set the van on fire and, like, push it into the skinhead house and just burn that shit
to
the ground.
That would be awesome. But yeah. That's, again, like a little too action movie.
But yeah, but that's why I'm glad he didn't do it. Yeah. Just I think it ended so perfectly and so appropriately where, like you said before, when you have a movie that is really true to like how people act. I mean, like Anton Yelchin is in shock basically for most of the movie.
Well, yeah, and
there's this amazing scene. The paintball pep talk.
Yeah.
Is beautiful. And he starts telling it and everyone's kind of ignoring him because he's getting duct tape wrapped around his wounds and everyone's ignoring him. Cause they're like, he's in shock. He's just talking nonsense. But
well,
then when he gets
also,
to finish
like,
it,
he's doing the classic, like, taking way too long to tell this story and you're just like, yeah, what is the fucking point? Like, we're right about to go bum rush some fools and you're like telling
you know
this long
funny
story.
If they listened to him, maybe they'd all be alive.
Right, exactly. But they're all just like, he's in shock. He's having his hand duct taped back onto his body.
And this is okay, this is one of the things that I loved most about this movie. The green room,
yeah,
the place that they're stuck, initially seems like a bad place to be. And then it
right
slowly becomes their safe haven.
Yeah.
Because they are 100% outmatched. They are surrounded.
Oh, my God.
One of
yeah
the guys dives through a window and is just immediately knifed almost
God, this,
to death.
The second he did that, I was like, you're fucked, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I was super. Because that's like real nightmare material.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, you're finally out, and then, oh, wait, you're beset by a bunch of people who are going to murder you. The one of the guys gets his throat ripped out by a dog. I mean,
yeah, and dogs feature very heavily in this movie.
Every time they get out, they can't move any further, and they have to go back to this fucking green room, which, again, is like a nightmare.
Yeah, I love that. I love that they had to keep returning to it.
And it becomes like a home base.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, here's a line from the review that was written by our website, at Can. They never take the many opportunities to escape or even keep working their way outwards, and instead return to the green room again and again, despite having immediately established it to be a dead end.
No.
I'm not trying to be an asshole, but come on. Like, did you watch the movie? Like, that's the point. Like, it's a dead end, but there's nowhere else to go.
Right. Yep. And I think unless at one point they lock all the doors.
Yeah.
Like, toward the end of the night, yeah.
Unless you want to be murdered, that's pretty much all you've got left. And it's just kind of thing where it's like you kind of keep expecting it to turn into a siege movie, but it's not. It's like they're a bunch of rabbits in a warren and they run out and then immediately realize it's a bad idea and then run back. And that's where the tension comes from. That's where because you're like, why are they going back to the green room? And it's like, oh, God, because that's the only safe place now.
Yeah.
And it's also pretty interesting because they kind of establish this this grate that they can kind of use to see if anybody's in front of the door and things like that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was I wish Imogen Poots, her character Amber, had kind of realized that a little bit sooner before Anton Yelchin
got hacked.
Oh, yeah.
Got his hand just demolished.
Because she sees Patrick Stewart.
She noticed
boots.
It. She, yeah. Yeah, she notices it, but she notices it like a second
sees,
and a half too late.
She sees the red laces a little too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's another great thing about this movie is the way it sets up the world. I mean, Tadpole is like, I got a vacuum. My brother and his girlfriend are coming over. They meet the brother, and he's like, don't tell anyone that. And then you hear about the red laces. And then you hear about the dogs. And then, like, everything keeps compounding on itself.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got, like, Fleischwolf, which is...
That, yeah, again, like, that every small detail plays into the ultimate twist, which is... I mean, it's not...
It's not even a twist. It's just a story that you're discovering. It's not like...
Well, because I think
the most recent movie that could go along with it would probably be something like 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Well, I'm not saying like twist, like like that kind of twist. I'm saying like you find out that, you know, it's basically this venue is like a front for like heroin.
Because remember, it's a movement, not a party.
Mm-hmm. But there's
and of course, like Gabe doesn't realize that, and I'm not sure if the friend. if the mutual friend knows, but he's definitely thrown aback when he realizes what's down there. And as soon as he realizes that, I mean, he was already leaving, but that kind of solidifies, like, his position. Because they also killed his girlfriend.
Well, and, like, and then there's also kind of a... There's a... they find out that Tadpoles is his brother, or his cousin. I thought it was his cousin.
I think it might be cousin. I think I misspoke
and
when I said
that.
And
woman who gets killed are going to run away together. I think she was dating the guy from Cowlcatcher.
No, she was dating the cousin.
Oh, I thought she was with the guy from Cowlcatcher, was going to leave him for that guy, and they were going to run away together. And they had a bat that was like a piece of evidence from killing. Yep. So there was that element to it. And I also will say, I think going into this, like, of course, I think anyone going into this movie is probably thinking, like, is there going to be some, like, sensitive racial stuff going on because it's skinhead versus, like, progressive DC punks? I really appreciated the way that Saulnier dealt with it because, number one, the N-word is only used once. And it is used to great effect because it's basically Patrick Stewart. I mean, the whole, it's, you think it's like, I think he's basically saying that they're distributing this heroin.
Well, they've poisoned the heroin that they gave to Cowcatcher.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. I told them to stay away from that
N-word
dope.
Junk.
And so what he's saying is, you know, they're going to die, but we've made it look like they just took a hot shot of heroin.
Right. And it's, I like that. And I like, there's a very, and it's in the background, like you can barely hear it when they ask Amber, why do you hang out with these skinheads? And she says something to the effect of, oh, some non-white people like mess with me and my
friends.
Yeah,
like the people who hurt me weren't white.
Weren't white. And they're like, oh, is this a white people problem now?
It like, was some, and it was something like, they had a witty rejoinder to that too. Like, oh, were they men or were they women or something like that?
Yeah, it was really interesting where it's there, but it's like, we don't want this to be the, like, we don't want this to be the point of this movie.
Right, because people have all different kinds of reasons for coming to these kind of things. And while some of them are the true believers, you know, some of them are just people who don't have anywhere else to go and they're in an economically depressed area and they happen to have good bands at this place. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's interesting where it's like, I'm kind of glad that he didn't get all heavy-handed and discuss, because it is, and it also is like, and my husband kind of pointed this out too, where it's like, when you have such an extreme, like such extremism, like with these skinheads, it's like you can't assimilate them back into society. Like you basically have to kill them all. It's like so insane.
Well, I'm gonna say that the Film Stage Show does not endorse the
it is kind of like that is kind of like the punk, but I'm not saying like we believe that, but I'm saying it's like that's kind of like this punk, like I think that is really like at the root
mentality.
Of this movie where it's like, yeah, it's just like fuck them all.
I think most punks are nonviolent, but okay.
No, but I'm just saying it's like the complications of it.
It's
complicated.
Let's cut Amanda off before she starts a race war.
No, it's complicated. I'm just saying that's what. No, I'm not saying that. Anyway, it's just interesting because it's just like it's just such a heavy ass movie, and so like, and I gotta say, can we talk about the dogs a little bit?
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about that because the guy who is the dog handler plays Elliot in Beginners. Do I even remember Beginners?
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Yeah, it was you. Oh, what? Bill.
I know.
Intervention. So, Elliot is Ewan McGregor's best friend in that movie. And he's like a kind of goofy guy. He's tagging stuff and, you know, he's just a great guy. And in this movie, I was like, oh God, is that the guy who played Elliot? I feel like I haven't seen him in literally anything else. And now I'm seeing him as a Nazi dogfight trainer.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
Do you know the dogs' names were Brownie and Grim?
You mean the real dogs? Or,
the real dogs in real life.
Oh, what were their...
Nazi and Grim.
Because they had like angry German names, didn't they?
In the movie they did. Actually, I don't know. Did they have names?
I don't know if they had angry German names, but they definitely had angry German commands.
Oh yeah. What was it? What bite was like? Feiss.
Yeah.
Like, Fos. Yeah, I can't remember. It was, but like the one, like I love what he did with that one dog, because the one dog gets injured and he's like, oh, it has like, he pumps him full, I'm guessing, of some sort of like,
like an amphetamine or something.
Yeah, like an amphetamine. He's like, he's got one more hour left in him. And then the dog,
this will give him one more hour to live. Yeah, I would consider it a personal favor if he died with meat in his teeth or something.
Yeah, yep.
But it's so like, it's so incredible. And like the way he like cuts back and forth between what's going on at the compound and the dog making its way back to the compound is so brilliant. And then the dog, they're sitting there after all of this shit has just gone down and they're just like in shock. And then the dog shows up and they like pick up their guns and the dog just walks past them, walks past the dead bodies, lays down next to his owner. I was like, what are you doing to me, Sonya?
And someone brought this up in another podcast, but they were basically saying that this is, it's kind of the perfect encapsulation of the Nazi movement, of like so much that's wrong with this world is basically because of your surroundings.
That's like a powerful point, is like that dog, you know, which is, we've seen murdered people, but that's just like how it was conditioned and abused and trained, and at the end of the day it just wants to die with someone that loved
with
it.
His owner. I was like, when that happened, I was like, this movie has just wrecked me. I'm wrecked. I'm thoroughly wrecked. I can't
do
it anymore.
Stuff like that. There's stuff like when Anton Yelchin tells Patrick Stewart, like, you were so much scarier in the dark.
Oh, yes.
And then the whole, again, my like probably one of my favorite last lines in a movie is when you tell someone who gives a shit. Like, a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of good stuff here.
It's such a, like, and like what I was saying before with the extremism, I think it is a very much a, like, us versus them. Like, and it's so complicated and it's so, like, frightening in that way where it's like, then there's like the politics of it. It's such a great movie. I can't even, like,
One thing that was really cool, and Brian mentioned this earlier, but so that Prince scene, I watched a press screening of it the day that Prince died.
Ooh.
And so
that scene
happens, and it's right before they're all about to, I think it's the first time they're all about to leave the room and like make this big charge. And of course, Aaliyah Shawkat's character throws this what is it? It's like
it's
a,
like a
light tube. Straight up throws it against this wall, thinking there's going to be punks there, and it's like, nope, nobody's there. Nobody's in the hallway.
Who would have thought that the fire extinguisher would be the most effective weapon in this movie?
It was super effective.
Anyways, the guy mentions Prince, and like I said, it's right in the middle of this like super intense scene. You don't know what's going to happen on the other side of this room, and Everybody, like the entire audience goes, aw. And then they just spontaneously started all clapping. And you're just like, what is going on in this movie right now? Like,
I don't
understand people who get sad when celebrities die. I like, this is a weird tangent, but like people were like talking about crying.
I have a feeling that people are going to get more mad that you said that than about my whole extremism thing.
you advocating for the wholesale slaughter of Nazis.
That's not what I was advocating, Brian.
He's going to be trumped by me saying that, you know, Prince died.
She was being wishy-washy about what she was saying. You were very much straight on.
No, I wasn't being wishy-washy. I was saying that basically, like, it's the us versus them mentality what I was saying.
What, like, it seemed to me is, like, you know, it was that whole, you got a problem, dog. Like, you know, nothing gonna make that dog better.
That poor dog.
I know. But that dog is better because the dog knew it was gonna die and all it wanted was...
God damn it. God damn it. It's so... Like, that's how you end it. Oh, you bastard, Sonya.
And that is crazy because it's like, you know, you kind of grow to hate these dogs, but then you realize, like, the poor dog.
Oh,
like,
no, I don't. I don't grow to hate
dogs. The dog's
I
legitimately murdered two people, at least.
I can't.
I can't call that murder, though.
I can't do that. Sorry. No, I can't, because they're dogs, Brian.
Well,
they're
that's
dogs.
The thing. Like, they become these, like, horrifying, malevolent creatures. But then you realize, like, no, it's just a dog.
No, I always felt
like,
bad
at the
for
end
them
of the day,
the
when it knows its time is coming, it just wants to be at the person who took care of it.
Oh, so
and that's how this movie is great, because it takes those monsters, it makes them monstrous, but then it also shows you the deeper, softer levels.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Well, again, I kind of want to bring up Macon Blair's character, because I think he's the one that kind of makes the film work really, really. Like, he brings it up a notch, because you really don't get a, like, his character comes off as the most real, because he's just trying to watch out for himself the entire time. Mm-hmm. And so, like, he's, like I mentioned at the beginning when I was talking about him, I think his character is so interesting because, like I said, you just can't get a feeling for whether he's good, whether he's mm-hmm. bad, because at first he's taking care of it to the point where you're like, oh,
he's a toady. Like, I mean, he's totally got this.
Like, he calls the cops back, and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah,
right.
But sure. He legitimately wanted the situation to end okay.
Yeah,
but
he did.
That very yeah. quickly got taken out of his hands.
Yeah. Well, by the time he goes to Darcy, I think he knows it's not going to go well. And of course, as soon as Darcy knows about it, he's just like, ugh, this
and his
this
name
sucks.
Is Darcy. can we just? His name is Darcy. Come on. Well, also, it's like. I feel like he's almost reprising his role from Blue Ruin. Maybe that's just how Macon Blair just acts. That's just his style. He's very, like, quiet.
Low-key Joe Latrulio.
Yeah. He's very... Yeah. Yeah.
No, when I watched Blue Ruin, I was like, is that Joe... No.
That's so funny that you said...
I don't see the two of them at all, but okay.
Blue Ruin, you'll understand.
He's very quiet.
Wait, so you've seen Blue Ruin, and you don't see him as being Joe Latrulio?
Well, I see Joe Latrulio because I just know him from Brooklyn 999.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So he doesn't strike me as that character at all. So
I'm saying in the face, not the personality.
Yeah, I don't see that either.
Okay, well I'll make a meme and I'll send it to you.
Thank you, Brian.
Side by side,
you're doing God's work.
I know. So I have nothing else to say about this film. we've talked it to death. We've
yes.
hacked it to the bone. This is a great film. I don't know if it's going to be in my top 10 at the end of the year, but...
Oh, it'll be in my top 10.
Okay.
I already know this.
It might get edged out by Triple Nine.
Fuck a Triple Nine.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, now we know how men feel.
Go put more bodies in a trunk.
This movie has made me very surly.
This movie made you very surly.
I feel like it has.
Look,
I am
go do some push-ups. Go look at patio furniture.
Oh, that's right. You saw this today, didn't you?
I saw this today, man. I am in a mood.
Last night.
I'm in a mood. And then we got into the car. Okay, I'll just say this. And we got in the car, and my husband has been listening to this Spotify. Like, somebody compiled a huge 90s list. It's just 90s songs. Mm-hmm. And we got into the car. A Fugazi song came on, yes. Followed by that song by Refuse that's in that Doom commercial now.
The one that starts off with Can I Scream?
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because he's already screaming.
He's already screaming.
Who is he asking permission for? He obviously doesn't care.
So wait, I went from this movie to these two punk songs playing on the Spotify list, and I was like, I'm just going to get out of the car and just punch someone in the face. Like, I'm
it's
out of control.
Amazing
right
when
now.
A movie can do that to you. It's like when you get out of a Fast and Furious movie and you're like, someone has to drive. I'm basically drunk right now.
Right, exactly.
Like, if I get behind the wheel of this car, I will do something nuts.
Oh, my God. But yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. I don't know if I'm going to sleep tonight.
I had trouble falling asleep last night because I kept thinking about things in this movie. Because, like, in addition to it just being tense, like, you empathize with these characters and the violence is so real that, like, I was feeling legitimately bad for these non-people.
Right. Right.
Like, thinking about the guy diving through the window and getting stabbed to death. Like, that bums me out.
Poor Aaliyah Shawkat. Poor that. She's like, I don't know what to do. I felt... She did a very... I mean, she took care of herself pretty well for a while, but man, I was like...
fucking kill a dog with a shotgun, though.
It is pretty... It is
no
pretty
one ever told
interesting.
Her about leaving a target.
It is pretty interesting, though, that, like, when you see Anton Yelchin's hand, you're pretty much, like, once really things start boiling over, you're like, oh, this dude's dead. Like you're kind of giving up on that character.
You know what's weird? I totally pegged that he was going to live.
Yeah, I did too, actually.
I actually...
he's the first character you see when the movie opens.
No, I was like, you know what they're going to do? They're going to do that. I don't know how I did this, and I'm... it's not a knock against the movie, but I knew that he would be the only one of the punks to survive and the other girl would live.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I was like, this is exactly the type of movie that'll put him at a disadvantage and keep him alive. And
I think a lot of it is because he's the least macho of all of the guys in the band.
And the other guy's the biggest name.
Well,
I don't know if that really has anything to do with it. Well, I guess. But
that plays into it every now and then.
He's a gentle little boy. He has like a gentle, like his, Anton Yelchin's a sweet little man.
I don't want anything bad to happen to him. That's why I liked him in Fright Night so much.
Oh my God.
We should do a podcast on Fright Night.
We should.
I didn't like the original one. Is the remake better?
I don't know. I see the original.
I like both of them.
Oh, really? I wasn't crazy about the original.
Yeah, y'all haven't seen...
isn't David both? David Tennant, that's one of the guys in that, right?
Yeah, David Tennant.
Yeah.
Some freaking Doctor Who.
Yeah, David Tennant doing his
in the
best...
new one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Huh.
He's doing his best version of the guy from...
Chris Angel?
No, from Underworld Evolution.
Michael Sheen?
Yeah, because they both have really long hair. And they both are, like, very, like, you know, they're
wide-eyed British.
Yeah, wide-eyed British and
character
very
actor, yeah.
Skin-tight, skinny. And just like, oh, okay.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, that's it for now. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and next time when we will be talking about Captain America Civil War. So let's start off with Amanda Waltz.
You can find me on Twitter at Media Waltz. You can also find me on Letterboxd, Media Waltz, and you can also find my blog Steel Cinema on WordPress.
And Bill Graham.
You can definitely never, never, never find me in the green room. I will not be going inside. You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can find me writing about movies at The Film Stage and FreshFiction.tv, and that's about it.
All right, and you can find me at my personal site, DearFilm.net. You can find me writing reviews over at The Film Stage. Like I said, I had the review for Keanu, and I will be the one writing the review for Captain America Civil War. So if you want a preview of how that podcast is going to go, check that out. Other than that, you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. You can follow this entire podcast on Twitter at Film Stage Show. And again, look us up on Facebook, The Film Stage Show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Join us next week. I'll accelerate, 'cause I fucking do. Maybe that is also be a better.